Recording has started. You may begin.
Thank you very much, Cheryl Langdon Orr, for the record. And we have a relatively small group tonight today because this is a working party for a stress test. But I would like to note that with the standard of looking at the Adobe Connect room and taking the roll call from those that are in the Adobe Connect room, we'll be doing a roll call that way for today's call. And if anyone is only on audio, if they'd like to make themselves known now, we will have staff add your name to the attendance. Is there anyone who is only on phone line and not on the Adobe Connect? If so, please speak now. Not hearing anyone? Let's just get going. My name's Cheryl Langdon Orr, and I want to thank all of you for turning up to today's call, and I'm delighted to see a number of people in today's call that haven't joined us running through our stress tests in the past. We've had one prior meeting in terms of face-to-face meetings, which we held in Singapore. It was a very small group, but Steve and I would very much like to thank all of you for joining us today to go through our existing 25 stress tests. As most of you should know, we have in fact done a single read-through, a starting of a run-through of these stress tests. We have also had this. I just had something else happening here. Fine, I apologise for that. That we recognise, of course, that the stress tests cannot be finally completed and discussed until we have our draft proposals from Work Party 1 and 2 put to bed, which won't be happening for a short while yet, but in advance of documentation from our work party that we'd like to have available before our face-to-face meeting in Istanbul in about a fortnight's time, we want to run through the 25 stress tests and have a slightly more critical eye put through, obviously, those that we've already gone through and discussed, and also in particular focus on the ones we have yet to go through. And I do apologise for the delay in today's call. Brenda and I will sort out later what seemed to be going wrong then. I've noticed that you've all got the version 7 of the current stress tests, which was recently distributed to the list up in front of you on the Adobe Connect room. And I'd like to ask Steve Del Bianco how he would like to, because he's done a lot of the heavy lifting, if not all the heavy lifting, on this stress test work so far, would he like to pick up where we've left off with the main meetings review or start from the beginning? I'm tempted to start from the beginning, but I'm happy to go with whichever way Steve is comfortable with. Steve, over to you.
Hello, Cheryl. Steve Del Bianco here, and we'll go with your preference, which was to start at the beginning.
Terrific.
The caveat you gave is perfect, though. Let's not obsess over the third column of the stress test, since we are merely evaluating what are very skeleton proposals right now. So there can't be detail in the third column. What's there is supposed to be concepts on how we would apply the stress test. And I do hope that it identifies potential gaps in what the proposals currently look like. Yep. So with that, Cheryl, I guess we could. I mean, I believe that Alice has loaded the markup that Sam sent around. Is that correct, Alice?
Yes, that is correct, Steve.
Right.
And if anyone else on the call has submitted markups, then I'll have to apologize now for not having reviewed or incorporated them here. Has anyone else on the call already submitted written markups the way that Samantha did? Oh, good. Seeing no hands, I'm happy to just proceed with the discussion.
Terrific.
So
go ahead.
If folks are able to scroll down to the first block, which is on page 2 of the document, we had discussed this one in Singapore. What's new here is that the general financial crisis and domain industry crisis has been combined with two other stress tests. So we have 5, 6, 7, and 8 in here because they all have the same consequence. They all have the same consequence. And these were stress tests that when Eric Bruner-Williams was rapporteur of the group were added. I believe he got them from some work that the ALAC had been doing, but I can't know for sure the origin of these. But I do hope that those of you on the call would find it acceptable to say that all four of these have the same consequence and we should deal with them in a single stress test.
See if you can get any. Sorry, Cheryl, for the record, just see if you ask the question. Wait for some feedback. No one's objecting to that. Dealing with them as a group. Okay, go ahead. Thanks, Steve.
Yeah, in the interest of getting through them all, folks should just pop up their hand in the Adobe, and we'll simply stop and address your concerns as well. So, Sam added. A couple of extra paragraphs here with respect to the existing accountability measures. And I value Sam's input, but I do want to understand that Sam works for ICANN and is in a good position to tell us what ICANN does, but also is, well, relatively defensive about ICANN's current accountability measures. But let's keep in mind that we are not evaluating the current accountability measures. Our objective is to enhance accountability with the one chance we have, with the one last remaining bit of leverage. That is the IANA contract. So, Sam, does anyone have any objection to the two things that Sam wants to add in the middle column on stress tests 5, 6, 7, and 8?
Steve, great. Cheryl here.
So, since we covered... Go ahead.
Do you just want to, because this will be recorded and archived, there isn't a lot of text to deal with. If you just briefly read the additions to the record, so it helps if anyone's looking at the archive later.
Okay, Cheryl. What Sam added was that the registrar should approve ICANN's variable registrar fees through registry agreements, require registry operators to cover these amounts if the registrar fees are not approved. He also suggests that ICANN's reserve fund could support continued operations in a period of reduced revenue and reserve funds subject to continued review for maintenance according to best practices. Personally, I find that to be completely unnecessary. So it would be my view that we not bother adding the second of Sam's edits there. I don't think that adds anything.
This is Sam. The reason I added that is that the fact of the review of the reserve fund, though it's not necessarily that a review and redress accountability measure, it is something on the operational side that's an important accountability item that, you know, we're actually looking at. That there's actually work going on about how the reserve fund is maintained. So that's why I added it.
Sam, maintained, does this also include a look ahead at risks such that the reserve fund is increased when the environment is riskier? I don't know what maintenance means or best practices in this case.
Yeah. So what this is on a regular basis, I think it's every, you know, 2 to 3 years or so, the reserve fund policy and the reserve fund management is reviewed using external people to continually consider the proper amount for the reserve fund, typically tied to a year's worth of operational operating costs, but there's always a test as to whether or not that's something that meets with best practices, whether that's something that meets with the organization's needs, but also on how the fund itself is being managed, distributed, and making sure that the investment policy that goes along with that makes sense and is responsible for the organization.
Thanks, Sam.
Just briefly, as I put in the chat, Sam, yes, that is damn good corporate governance practice, but it's far from mandatory.
Yes, it's correct, but it is something, it is a practice that we have at ICANN.
Dan, did you say it's reviewed every 2 to 3 years, or is it on a firm schedule?
I don't know what the review cycle is. I know it's been reviewed twice since I've been at ICANN, so I think it's around a 3-year cycle, but I don't know if it's hard-coded in as a 3-year cycle or not.
And is it an independent review or internal?
Independent.
All right. Cheryl, this is Steve. I will I'll just abbreviate it to say the reserve fund is reviewed independently, periodically, something like that, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Thanks, Sam. That's helpful. Any other comments on this set? Seeing no hands, why don't we move to the next page? Sorry, same page. This is a stress test on corruption or fraud. Again, this came over from the stress test team. We categorized it along with the rest of these when we were in Frankfurt. The consequence was major impact on the reputation, litigation, and loss of reserves. So the black text on the screen was what we had put in, and the blue text was added by Sam. Sam, you want to walk us through the edit you want to make?
Sure. I put in 2 edits because these are both internal measures that help mitigate against major corruption or fraud. The first is, it reads, ICANN is subject to an annual independent financial audit that includes testing of internal controls to protect against corruption or fraud. The independent auditor is appointed through and reports to the ICANN Audit Committee, which itself is primarily comprised of independent directors. I put a link into the charter, whether or not that's necessary, for the ICANN Audit Committee. Do you want to discuss this one first and then go to the second edit?
Why don't you read into the record the second one? Cheryl wanted these to be read out.
Sure. And the second edit is, ICANN maintains an anonymous hotline policy that allows for employees around the world to report suspected fraud, among other things, and trigger an investigation. Pursuant to the ATRT2 recommendations, ICANN is undertaking a review of its anonymous hotline policy to confirm that it remains at or above best practice levels.
And then with respect to the bottom of the column, existing measures would not be adequate if that's highlighted. Were you suggesting a change to that as well, Sam?
Well, this goes to the general corporate risk issue versus others. There are probably other items that this applies for, but I was making a statement that there is no, this is a general corporate risk to any entity, and that there's likely no complement of accountability measures that can address this. And so I don't know if it's something worth noting, right? It's not something that really could ever be capable of having full redress through an accountability measure just because of the nature of the risk itself.
And that was the conclusion of the group. In both cases, we had said that the either existing or proposed measures are helpful, but would never be enough if you had substantial losses or costs.
Yeah.
And I know that you added losses, and I think that's helpful as well. So, is there any discussion of Sam's proposed edits to the existing measures for major corruption or fraud?
Steve, not so much an addition to Sam's edits, but just wanted to raise something from the chat. Cheryl, off the record, by the way, the chat that was running in the CWG meeting, And I know Chris Lahat's on this call, and Chris might want to speak to this, but Chris did, I do take notes anytime anyone mentions stress test anywhere. Chris was talking about the role of the Ombudsman in terms of acting as a confidential place to lodge issues in terms of consequences of corruption and other things under whistleblowing. And he was suggesting in the CWG the addition of a stress test. To me, this would be a subset of this existing nine. I just wondered whether Chris wanted to look at nine now and let us know whether or not this is picked up on the issues or whether or not he feels the conclusion, existing measures would not be adequate, may need some annotations that does look at the future, if not current, role of the Ombudsman's Office as an accountability measure. Chris, do you want to say anything at this point? Not hearing anything. He may have a muting issue, which I know does happen from time to time. If he comes back to this, fine. If not, we'll take it offline. I don't want to hold up the proceedings because I want us to move along. But I do think that there's a possibility of adding some text in here if the Ombudsman's Office sees that there's an opportunity for the role of an Ombudsman's Office to in the proposed accountability measures perhaps have some options and perhaps even some annotations in the existing ones. Back to you, Steve.
Thanks, Cheryl. I have no objection to Sam's edits. If anyone else has something to add, otherwise we'll move on to the next one.
Okay.
Great. Now we move on to stress test. Numbers 1 and 2. This is really related closely to the work of the CWG, that is the IANA functions transition. As you know, when we developed the original list of stress tests, it was to cover both CCWG and CWG activities. So the conclusion on this one is, of course, at this point, CWG's recommendations, separability, separate structures, accountability are not yet complete. So in particular, we don't want to be seen as if we're judging work that the CWG is doing. We want to be helpful and have these stress tests available to them. While I'm on that topic, I'd love to see what the group thinks about, once we've done this markup, we would want to convey this formally over to the CWG team in an effort to be as helpful as we can and to identify the several stress tests in here that are related to the CWG's accountability measures. Any objections to doing that once we get the document in good shape? Eberhard, go ahead. Eberhard, do you have your hand up real quickly? And I wanted to acknowledge you. Do you have something you want
to add? Hang on. I just had the button on mute. Can you... I'm not objecting, but I'm opposed to sending something to another working group before we have sent it through to our own CCWG.
Eberhard, that's a fair concern. I did want to point out, though, that even with respect to our CCWG, the conclusions in the right-hand column are all just draft, since we don't have any proposed measures to go against. But I think it's a safe thing to do what you're suggesting. So we could quickly write to the chairs or perhaps the whole CCWG and ask whether they are interested. The entire CCWG did see our draft stress test because I replied to you with the PDF and a reply all, I believe it was Friday. So it did go out to all, but we didn't see much chatter from the rest of the CCWG. So Cheryl, what's your view on that? Do you want to
Well,
let's
note that Sam's also said in the chat no objections to a formal transmittal once it's approved by the CCWG. But back to you, Everhart. I think you've got more to say.
Yeah. My feeling is we should read everything twice, and that means we should at least read it in the main accountability group at least months, but you have sent it. Once the edit is made, we can send it to the list. Maybe by the time in Istanbul we get it discussed for the second time, and then we can send it off. I'm a little bit opposed of subgroups sending work out to third parties, not really through channels. I'm not a formalist in that sense, but we are a subgroup of the accountability working group, and I prefer that work, which the accountability working group should work by consensus, and I would prefer that the work we're doing is sort of run formally through this structure.
Thanks, Everhart. Steve, are you comfortable with that approach?
Sure.
I think there's another aspect that we could take advantage of in the Istanbul meeting setup, because there is both the CWG and, of course, then the following CWG meetings going on in the with a transition where the chairs and rapporteurs and liaisons will be able to interact in the middle of that week. Area 4, RFP 4, was the group that was looking at stress test issues within the CWG. Could be asked to look at our publicly available wiki space and our materials by then, and perhaps that's not so much a formal transmittal of information, but rather a raising of awareness that they could watch this space. And like anyone can make some contributions. So we might be able to take a sort of a pincer movement here as well. But I see Jonathan with his hand up. Jonathan Zook, over to you.
Yes, can you hear me okay?
Yep, a little bit soft, so speak up tight.
Yeah, thanks. I'm on a train. I guess I just maybe... coming on top of your comments, Cheryl, that I think what's special about some of these stress tests is that they actually apply to the work of the other working group. And so it's not really a question of somebody making it some formal approval process in our working group before theirs, but it's actually an indication of the fact that the stress tests are encompassing both working groups. And it makes me that they are looking at them sooner rather than later, given that it's in their purview or in their remit to the stress test. And I think that undue formalism, especially in those, is uncalled for and maybe ill-advised.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Jonathan. Your volume was, Cheryl, for the record, was very low. So if I can paraphrase you and jump in if I've misquoted you, you're just warning us against undue formalism, whilst recognising that we do have to be cautious and careful about how we approach these things. But that because it is pivotal, where we are looking at some stress tests which specifically relate to the IANA transition, the IANA stewardship transition work, that it behooves us to have a open and an active dialogue with the CWG grouping that is focused on this same area, and that we should probably be working towards doing that without worrying too much about undue formalism. I think that's what you were saying, and I guess that does reinforce my pincer approach, where we strongly encourage and make sure we raise awareness of what we are doing before anything, you know, formal and final goes across. The other thing is, of course, what we could do is request, as I think we certainly did to the leads of what was then RFP 4 in the Singapore meeting space time to have the leads and rapporteurs of the working party that was engaged in CWG on the stress tests to look at our work then. So we have an informal invitation open. We can perhaps follow up on that informal invitation either via the chairs or directly. I don't think that would be stepping too far out of the line. Everhart, your responses to that approach perhaps before we move on?
We are chartered in a certain way, and a subgroup of a few people comes up with a good paper, but we all know how this works. Even if we have the brightest and the most motivated and the most competent GAC representatives participating actively, it goes back to the GAC and it sits there for about 3 months before anything moves. Because there are so many governments or government representatives who have to take instructions, and things are slowly. So we are not losing anything, but I am really a little bit opposed to a subgroup of a subgroup making final decisions on this. I am totally for accountability and for openness, so we should have these documents out in the open, the others should be informed, but when we say, okay, that's our work product, then we send it to the chairs of the accountability group, and they send it through. I'm not saying we should hide this stuff or we should procrastinate, but we should do this the right way so that the accountability working group on consensus can agree to our proposals.
Thanks, Everhart. Cheryl, for the record again. And of course, we can't finalise our working party's work until other working parties have come up with proposed accountability measures in much more finite terms as well. So yes, I think we can find our way forward through this. It may not be as neat and tidy as if we were working in greater concert and with clearer nexus, but I'm pretty sure we'll be able to ensure that they're well and truly aware what we're doing, and I obviously welcome any input they might wish to make. Jonathan, your hand's still up. Is that an old hand because you're on a train and you haven't managed to lower it? I'm going to assume that's a yes and go back to you, Steve.
All right, let's look at the substance of this particular stress test and the per-draft evaluation, because it's something we have not yet discussed yet. After that discussion, there may be a change of heart about whether we should share this with the CWG and when. So under existing measures, if in fact the change authority for the root zone ceased to function, which is a failure of whoever it is that's running root zone management, and change authority for the nation, or the delegation authority for the root zone cease to function in part or whole. That is a relatively serious failure, and it's probably one that the CWG is addressing directly in their operational readiness standards, their service level agreements with ICANN as the likely contractor to run the IANA function, and under the present IANA contract, NTIA can revoke ICANN's authority and reassign to different entities. If you recall, NTIA had done an RFP, request for proposal, in 2011-2012, and it periodically did so, but as NTIA terminates the IANA contract, the authority that would pull the contract away from ICANN if it were not performing it and find a way to put it to an emergency operator or potentially a different operator, is something that the CWG has to design. So Sam edited by adding functions to IANA. That's helpful, thank you. Take a look at the third column, the proposed measures. Again, this is not something that our CCWG is working on, but Congress and the administration in Washington, D.C. have insisted on looking at the CWG and CCWG proposals together, and they're insisting on applying stress tests to the package of accountability and transition. So in that respect, this is one of four items in here that regard the CWG, and it'll be important for them to have a response ready. So here, all I've noted is that the CWG might design mechanisms and structures that enable separation. I realize they're not even committed on that. And I do understand from my observation of their work that they're trying to design it so that the IANA functions could be readily revoked and reassigned. There was even some discussion, I believe Google had come up with the idea of using an emergency back-end registry operator that could run the root in an emergency. And also to manage the revocation of IANA functions, the CWG might also propose the emergency. That's the second paragraph. All right, so happy to take a cue on whether this is substantively going to be helpful. And now, Eberhard, I hope you understand why I thought it would be helpful to show it to them. We're not making formal conclusions about their work. We're giving them a heads up that here's a stress test that's been noticed for several weeks. Oh, and here's how it might look, so it might inform the work that they're doing. But I'm happy either way to wait for the entire CCWG to look at it, to discuss this when we're together in Istanbul, or to send something over the transom early. Cheryl?
Thanks, Steve. I'm not noting anyone's hand up, but Eberhard, did you want to respond to Steve's question directly?
I'm not, the more I think about it, the worse it becomes. I'm really starting to get concerned about sending half-thought-out things or not final things for other parties to look at. We will have this in a two-way approach, like Cheryl suggested. That's a very good idea, but I'm really a little bit concerned about sending half not finalized things, and then we have to make changes and. That's not really the way I think we should do this. I don't agree with this.
Maybe I should have said it differently. Perhaps we should ask the CWG, tell us about your current draft mechanisms to handle the stress test, and we'll insert what they have to say in the third column. So it's not as much a matter of us telling them that we've reached any conclusions, because of course we haven't, but that... This is a framework. Maybe, what if we were to ask them if they wanted to provide input? Would that be better?
Yeah. Cheryl said we can publish our stuff and they can look at it, and we should communicate with them. But as I said, we will not be able to, we should not send a final or something that approaches finality unless it has been gone through a thorough review by the main accountability group.
Thanks, Eberhard and Cheryl, for the record, of course, and we won't be into any final phase until quite late in the process, so I think we're all in agreement on that. So let's use transparency to our advantage here. And I noted Edward Morris's comment in the chat that says, it makes sense to give the CWG a heads up as to what we are doing. And there are a couple of us who are actually active in the same area in CCWG and CWG, so we might utilise those opportunities to straddle both camps where that's possible as well, and perhaps use Istanbul as an opportunity to have those conversations in both groups as a awareness-raising exercise. Yes, Eberhard?
Have we got a CWG liaison in the stress test work party?
Nothing formal, because right now the CWG no longer has the grouping which pre-Singapore was looking at this. The CWG's modus operandi had a major overhaul at the Singapore meeting, and the approach to the drafting that they're now doing is focused on operational aspects in particular, and so what was these six RFP groups is now just parked to the side as foundational work, and a whole new way of doing the work is currently being a little bit more than begun, but it's in very early stages. So the answer to the question pre-Singapore I would have been able to give very differently than now. No such lock and key fit currently exists. But let's see what we can do informally.
All right, why don't we move on then? Any other comments on the substance of what we've said here?
Sorry, I was on mute. If we need to liaise with the CWG, then we should liaise with the CWG and ask them formally to put one of their people on this group. So we have we are not working separately, but we have a bit of an idea what the other side is doing.
Okay, I'll take an action item on that then. Thanks, Everhart. I think that's an excellent suggestion. So that's an AI for me, Grace and Brenda. I'll follow up with that. Thank you. Back to you, Steve.
That's a great idea. Ask them to put a liaison over to here. Thank you. Let's jump to the next one then. It's number 11, which is a compromise of credentials. And I believe that somebody lobbed this into Eric Bruder-Williams back in November or December when I believe ICANN had an incident with the security, a mild actual security breach incident. The suggestion here is it would have a major impact on the corporate reputation and significant loss of authentication or authorization capacities. So this stress test is designed to be rather serious, not necessarily a minor incident, and it's not inceivable. We know that corporations with bigger security profiles than even ICANN are breached quite frequently. And this threat is not related to the transition of IANA stewardship. And under the existing accountability measures, we said that based on the limited experience of the recent security breach, it's not apparent how the community holds ICANN management accountable for its security preparation, or it's not apparent that the community is able to force the implementation of adopted security procedures. Some of these security procedures could be the result of just good management practices in the IT department and the personnel procedures that are used at ICANN. On the other hand, the Security Stability and Resiliency Accountability Review might have specific recommendations when it does a review. And we all know that the SSAC watches things like this closely and may have recommendations of its own that make their way up through policy. So there's multiple ways you get at the notion of enterprise IT security and credentials. Under the proposed measures, I'm sorry, Everhard, did you want to weigh in now before we discuss the third column?
Yes. I don't want to criticize anyone. I just want to show as an example for this particular issue, we from our tech group for the tech day, we asked the IT department whether they would be interested to report on what happened and what they did to mitigate this among friends in a non-threat, they just declined to do that. That's exactly the. I don't want to criticize stuff, but this is exactly the thing. We have really no measure to look into what they're doing and why they're doing this and what happens and what's being taken. I don't want to go into operations. Operations is done by staff. But if something happens, we need to have one or other way to hold them accountable.
Thanks, Everhard.
Everhard, this is Steve. Did you suggest that somebody has already asked IT staff that question, or were you proposing that's something that we ought to consider doing?
Thank you.
We wanted them to make a presentation, and they just declined. They declined. They did not give us any comment. We asked through channels, and they said they are not prepared to do that without any weight, any connotations applied to it. The point is, in this stress test says, if there is an issue, we don't have the community does not have a measure to increase accountability or to force them to do something about it or to explain themselves. Often security issues are improved if more people who have an interest and an idea and experience talk about this. This is a stress test, and I just wanted to reinforce that we have these instances, and when a technical work group that has had technical issues or security issues reported in the past asked whether they were interested to give a briefing on what they did, they just said no. Point is not against the IT staff who said no, but we don't have a measure in place.
Everhard, it's Steve. Under the existing measures column, then, I would suggest we add something that the community does not apparently have standing to require ICANN staff to brief the community on actual security breaches.
I would
require
agree with
a request. Yeah. I'm not sure this was even request, let alone require. So let's use both.
I think
words.
The request was made. I think the request was made, but it declined, right?
It was probably refused because of lack of standing, though.
I don't want to speculate. I just wanted to make an example. We're looking at the stress test, and at the moment, even the most friendly techies that come to these meetings were unable to get a deeper insight into what happened and what was done about it. Okay.
I do think it's a great idea to add.
Now we need to further what we were discussing, or what is written. We should, I think, put in that if these things happen, the community must find a way to first of all that transparency is happening, in particular as far as it doesn't have to be. These attacks are not rocket science. In other words, if they become transparent, no new people are studying, oh, that's something we can try against ICANN. This is relatively unsophisticated stuff. But the community needs to see that these important things are being taken care of by motivated departments.
Yep. Increase confidence.
So, Cheryl, to close that loop, I was proposing adding a paragraph in the middle column about the community lacking standing to require ICANN to brief the community on a breach. And then it becomes a transparency issue, which leads to accountability. Would that be all right?
Got a check from Eberhard. Sam, your hand is up.
So I'm not familiar with the specific request that was made from the tech community. And I take your example, Eberhard, as illustrative, and as you noted, they didn't provide connotations, so we don't know reasons for why the request may have been denied. And I don't have a problem with the what you've recommended, Steve, in terms of what you'd propose to add under existing accountability measures, because I think I would agree there is not standing to require that. But I wonder if we could handle something differently under the proposed accountability measures. And I don't know if this is something we'd want to propose before we mention it to the CCWG, or if this is a way we'd like to float it into the rest of the CCWG. But it sounds like there is there almost a separately delineated power that to request some sort of, or to be able to have access to some sort of after-action report from these types of reported breaches. I think it could be very easily handled, or hopefully under some sort of proposed thing, and there could be some fairly simple wording around provide increased or require increased transparency around reporting after reporting to community after events such as this. But I do want to make sure that we don't keep a record on this call that there was a specific denial for any specific reason. We don't know. I don't know the timing of it. I don't know what was available. I don't know who was requested to provide it. So I think that we should make sure the record itself is not kept that there is a denial for a specific reason, But I'm fully supportive of including it within the chart here.
Sure, here. Thanks, Sam. And I think Eberhardt was very, very careful to say he was in no way criticising. He was making an observation, and it may very well be that it was simply scheduling. But without going down that particular set of hypothetical rabbit holes, the example he gave raised the issue and the importance of stress test 11. And I think your words, looking for it within the empowerment for community work plan to come up with some sort of proposed accountability measure which results in after action report with an aim for increased transparency is probably a good way forward in that column three. And I think Steve's already put to the record good language for column two. Sam, your hand's still up. Do you want to react? Nope. Eberhardt, your hand's up. Over to you.
I fully agree with what Sam and Cheryl just said, because I didn't say that either. We basically offered them the opportunity and they declined. That's what happened. And I'm perfectly fine with that. I would have liked to hear, but that's not the point. The point is not that I want to use this as leverage to get them to give a presentation at Tech Day. The point is that it's not the first time, it's not the last time. Other things will happen. The community does not have a mechanism to engage ICANN on this in a way that the community is being kept informed, that everybody, the security people or maybe the members of the security lists that are being established, if it's a trust issue, we don't have such a mechanism. I am not criticizing anyone. I am not criticizing IT staff for not doing this. IT staff that made the presentation on how meetings are organized did an excellent job. There is nothing wrong with the IT department. I'm just saying that we don't have a mechanism, and I use this as an example, and hence both Sam and Cheryl and I, we agree that the record will not must not be read to criticize ICANN staff in this regard.
Thanks, Eberhardt. I think that's very clear. And I think we've got at least the beginnings of some language for us to look at and remember this additional language that we're discussing in today's call will be going out to all of you for review, so you can dot the I's, cross the T's and think about better ways of saying things if indeed they exist before we put this to a new document and first reading to the rest of the group. Thanks very much, Steve. Back to you.
All right, let's look at the third column, the proposed measures. The first paragraph there demonstrates the value of doing stress tests because they sometimes will surface, early in the process, they will surface gaps. And I noted at the top of this column that we probably have a gap here because I don't believe we have any measures under discussion in the CCWG that would force ICANN management to execute stated security procedures for its employees and contractors. And I'm making a distinction here. I realize we have talked about in the second paragraph, a proposed measure, this first came up in Frankfurt, to empower the community to force ICANN's board to implement a recommendation that came out of an AOC review, like the security, stability, and resiliency. I'm sure all of you will recall that, and I think that's a community empowerment item that we're still discussing. So that works for broader types of security and stability policies that are implemented by ICANN. But we never get into the weeds about the procedures that are used to credential the identity of employees or contractors that do work on ICANN IT assets. And in fact, I don't really know, even if we had visibility of what those procedures were, because I'm sure they're available, I don't know how we could evaluate whether ICANN management is doing the security procedures that it's supposed to or force them to improve its execution. So there's probably no visibility, transparency, or after-action report there yet. So we ought to note that early on. It might be that it's too much detail for the CCWG to get into. It could end up being work stream two, and I understand that. So please take a look at the three paragraphs that are pasted in the proposed measures, and let's take a cue on that. I did want to note that Samantha made a comment about wanting us to be crisper in the third paragraph. But Sam, that's another possibility is to empower the community. It's not the job of a stress test to articulate what somebody should do. We're mostly evaluating the proposed measures that are coming over from the CWG and the CCWG. And again, until I know what they are proposing, we can't actually do the stress test in a bit of crispness or detail. Cheryl, you want to manage the queue?
Yeah, thanks. Eberhard, is your hand an old one, or is this a new hand up? Over to you, Sam.
Thanks. So I have a couple of different topics. So first, on the comments that I wrote in, so in the discussion of the accountability measures as well as the proposed accountability measures, where I was talking about Christmas wasn't about trying to forecast what should be there, what shouldn't be there, but it seems like there's some crossover in what we're discussing within these two. There's the conversation that we've had so far in this stress test has been about ICANN internal security measures and not necessarily about issues that would go to the security and stability of the Internet DNS. And when we're making references to the AOC review on security and stability and resiliency, which, if I recall, is itself focused on the security and stability and resiliency of the DNS, or citing to ESSEC recommendations, which, again, they provide the board with advice on security, stability, and resiliency as it relates to the DNS, seems like we're talking about two different things. And so
on purpose.
Yes, but without us acknowledging that we're talking about two different things is actually very confusing to look at. I think there needs to be some way of breaking it up, because there are many people who could read this and not understand that those are two separate issues. Internal security measures relating to systems within ICANN, and then security measures as they relate to the security, stability, and resiliency of the DNS. So
Sam, if we made a more clear of a break between the first paragraph in column three and the second and third, a heading or a distinction between internal security measures versus the higher level SSR items, because it would impact. I mean, if there were a compromise of credentials with respect to DNSSEC keys for the root zone, that might be something where procedure problems suddenly impacted SSR. Mm. So I think we do want to talk about both, and now I understand that you're just simply asking for a heading or a distinction.
Yep.
Right.
Yeah, a heading or between the first and the second. Okay.
Yes, I wasn't in any way trying to suggest that we shouldn't be talking about the SSR of the DNS here, because there could be times when credential compromise actually could impact that. But just in general, you wouldn't always solve the accountability of that by going to an ESSEC recommendation, because there's a lot that ESSEC might not actually appropriately be able to advise on if it's just relating to an internal security issue that doesn't impact the broader DNS, right? So that,
exactly.
I think it could be solved through headings.
And I'm happy to add that heading, but it doesn't change the substance of what we've written too much. We are going to add Sam's expression called after-action report. We're going to add that. And Eberhard, that's sort of the after-action report. We'll use that vocabulary here for the kind of thing that we lack the standing to require an after-action report.
Okay. And I did want to just provide some more information in terms of some other security measures that happen, particularly as it relates to the performance of the IANA function. So ICANN's work on DNSSEC, ICANN on an annual basis receives this trust certification or goes through the process of and then has achieved this trust certification for how it maintained its work on DNSSEC. So that is an existing accountability measure if we're looking at that broader SSR issue. Also, there's after the renewal of the IANA functions contract, there was a requirement put in for an audit over the IANA function, and that has been, because of the scheduling, I believe it's been performed at least once. I don't know if it's been performed a second time, but part of what that looks at are security protocols put in around, contractor access to systems and those sorts of issues. So that work, while it's not comprehensive to the entire IT department, is already underway. I just wanted to...
Dan, this is Steve. Could I ask you to send me that text? I'll insert it in the middle column. But could I ask you to send me that text on the DNSSEC and the IANA functions that you just mentioned? Okay.
Yes, I can do that.
That's good. Anything else on that one, Sam, Okay, back to you, Steve.
Great. Let's scroll down.
Yep.
Stress test number 17, and we're still in failure to meet operational expectations. And we have discussed this one a couple of weeks ago on the 24th of February on the CCWG call. But let's give everyone a chance to look this one over and see if there are any comments or questions on it.
Sam's got some additional text in the column 3 when we get to that, and we'll ask Sam to talk to her. Comment on that.
Okay. So this was a stress test that it kind of looks at what would happen if ICANN were not really paying attention to recommendations that were coming over. And the example that brought this to mind was the SSAC had given early on recommendations on name collisions and security certificate problems with domain top level domain lengths such as .mail.home. And there was a collisions issue with respect to the second level as well. And the evaluation was that there was no way to sort of motivate the board to act on what SSAC was putting in front of it. Okay? So we demonstrated, I think, in 2013 and 2014 that we didn't have the standing to do so formally, but we actually demonstrated that by informally bringing it up at multiple meetings of ICANN and generating a lot of groundswell community support, that management did respond appropriately and attended to the risks of collision, and attended to the risk of security certificates. So I don't think this is a sad story. It's probably a good story, and it's not a stress test that we failed, because we eventually found a way to address the stress and address the risk. We noted in the existing measures column that NTIA currently gives a clerical approval for a delegation, and all it does is indicate that ICANN has told NTIA that they followed their processes on adding a new domain name. And NTIA can delay a delegation if it doesn't quite agree or doesn't quite assess that ICANN did follow its processes. I don't actually know what would happen if ICANN had attempted to delegate .mail or .home, and it made its way across the NTIA desk, and a lot of us had lobbied NTIA to say, don't let that go in the root. .mail and .home are going to break the security certificate, so they're going to cause collisions. So we don't honestly know if that would happen, and it's probably neither here nor there, because NTIA is going to walk away from that role anyway. So that's why I didn't put too much time into the existing measures. And as we turn to the proposed measures, we ought to be able to force ICANN's board, the community ought to be able to force ICANN's board to implement a recommendation, like an SSR recommendation. We covered this earlier. I mentioned that another advisory committee like the SSAC, if they have recommendations, should we suggest that the CCWG empower the community to force ICANN to respond to? And that doesn't mean to implement. It might be that we would force ICANN to do a written response about whether it would implement recommendations coming from an advisory committee such as the SSAC. And that's the one where Sam had a comment. Sam, what does it say here? Another possible reference to policy process, and then the accountability options for the board following policy would come into play. Well, that would be the implementation side.
Hmm.
So there's two sides to that, Sam. The first notion is that if FSAC has raised concerns, and we believe that ICANN board and management are not addressing them, we ought to be able to force a response. Separately, if there's been policy development, and we believe that ICANN is not implementing it appropriately, we ought to be able to force an implementation. And those are different.
Yes. Yeah. So just a note that's not reflected in here, I get that, Steve. I think that, you know, as you read through the entire document, sometimes you see multiple parts of it, but forget that there might be another home for parts of the things that you're seeing. There is ongoing implementation work now within ICANN to address the ATRT2 recommendation that recommendations or advice coming out of any advisory committee should be acknowledged by the board. That recommendation itself doesn't go as far as requiring acceptance or implementation of those recommendations. So I don't know if part of what the proposed accountability measure here is proposing is something in addition to that, but at least it will start as part of the ATRT2 recommendation. There might be another path because there might be some formal board action that then comes about if you need a triggering point, but there it does relate to how the board considers AC advice that would include the SAC. So that might help in the implementation of the accountability measures as they get designed.
Can I suggest then that we, Steve, we ask Avery as the specific liaison from ATRT perspectives to just make sure that we get language that picks up on that quite appropriately in the column 3. Would that help, Sam?
Yeah, I think that would be helpful.
Okay.
And you can disregard the other comment I have.
Yep.
Great. All right, any other comments on stress test number 17? Great, thank you. Let's move to the next one. This is a expressly IANA transition-related item, and it's much more into the purview of the CWG than the CCWG. And yet, it's an area where we want to be as helpful as we can. If we have to provide an appeals process, this came up on a letter that the CWG chairs sent to the CCWG that we discussed extensively on the first day in Frankfurt, where they were asking about an appeals process of some kind, and whether we were designing an appeals process to empower the community to appeal a decision that ICANN made or a management action. And we indicated that, by all means, we'd love to be able to create a community empowerment mechanism that works for both the IANA functions as well as for general ICANN policy execution and implementation. So I think we are still on that track. So this particular stress test relates to CCTLDs. Looking at you, Eberhard, there are a government telecom minister might instruct ICANN to revoke and delegate, and Eberhard will help me with the vocabulary, because I'm pretty sure I have it wrong, despite objections from many current registrants and user communities in the country concerned. The question would be, under current accountability measures, what would happen? And we attempted to describe the current process, that ICANN certifies the processes were followed, and if there's a process that requires a more extensive approval of the user and registrant community before a CCDLD is revoked and reassigned, well, then that process, how do we know that that process was followed? So, Cheryl, this one is a complex one, and before reading it into the record, as you say, I did want to give Eberhard a chance to correct
yep.
vocabulary problems, structural problems, and maybe even some misperceptions I have about how this all works. So if we could go to Eberhard, would that be all right?
Yes, indeed. Over to you, Eberhard.
Okay. I have sent correspondence in this regards to this mailing list, but I don't find it. I don't use Microsoft products, so I cannot edit the text. We need not so much on the language, on the vocabulary. We need to include the framework of interpretation principles. The FOI working group was chartered to interpret the policy documents that the IANA function manager uses. And there is absolutely nothing that says that any third party, such as local internet community, has a say into whether a CCTLD manager is opportune or accepted by the community, or they have a right to revoke. The existing documentation, never mind the government's opinion about legal situation, subsidiarity, the documents that we interpreted, RFC 1591 and the GAC principles, clearly state, are interpreted by us, that only if there is substantial misconduct, a domain can, CCTLD can be revoked. In other words, if a telecom minister government requests a transfer, the local internet community is not being asked whether they agree to this. They only get asked when a new CCTLD manager is appointed in the selection process there. I think we have to rewrite the whole premise on which the dress is based. The objections, let's take an example. The most recent example was .ml, Mali. That was managed in country, and then it was the GAC representative of Mali requested a redelegation to the institution that she bears, and it was then pushed while a civil war was happening in Mali. It was pushed on the consent agenda at the ICANN board. Then I made some noises, it was taken off the consent agenda and it was discussed on the agenda and it was approved. It now turns out that it wasn't repatriated from Mali into Mali. It was repatriated abroad to a commercial company, which is marketing it aggressively. One wonders what the person pushing it stands to benefit from this. The documentation that IANA department published is boilerplate. On every redelegation, what they're publishing is boilerplate. It always says, blah, 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 we have certain things to do. But it never goes into the merits of an individual case. Same for the board. So the test is good. We need to see what has happened if a government wants to take this now. Some governments are more corrupt than others. Some governments are more legitimate than others. Some governments, like there is one in Guinea-Bissau or something, where two government departments basically contradict each other, depending on which party pays them or whatever. These are details which, if we take them together, we don't have an accountability measure to deal with them. As long as ICANN implements the framework of interpretation working principles, whether there is a transition or not, this should not happen, because as long as the person does a good job or the entity does a good job, ICANN, as the IANA function manager, will not deal with it. It does not say what the government does on the local level. The subsidiarity principle is totally remains. But we don't have a mechanism, and that's quite correct, to act if something like that happens. Third thing is, .de has no say in what happens to .na, and I have no say in what happens in .nz. In other words, there is no community that has a standing to make a complaint or to follow up on what happens with another CCTLD. The CCTLD manager is on his own. Not that I say he shouldn't be. I think it's also a legal thing. And I mean, Cheryl was on the FOI working group. She will probably bear me out that my longer treatise that I just wrote is more or less the consensus of what was discussed there.
Yeah. Thanks, Everhart. And what I might ask you to do is if you could put some text forward to Steve and I to make sure the to ensure that the mentioning of the framework of interpretation and the GAC principles is appropriately written into stress test 21, that will be very useful edit there as well as once we've got that, then taking into consideration some of the text that we now need to discuss in column two as well. Thanks, that Everhart. That's an action item on you, staff, if you could note that, please. I see Paul. Paul, could you please, you have your hand raised. It's over to you.
Yeah. Yes, thank you. I want to answer Ms. Alyssa here a bit, or a question. What you're saying is that only the CCTLD manager can do revocation or redelegation then. So if a stable democratic government demands a revocation or redelegation, it should not be considered. And some parts of what you say, I really don't understand. I mean, we can go, how far should we go? If ISIS starts a CCTLD, well, what can we do about that? I think these matters, you have to read the GAC principles and the FOWG that you yourself were part of writing.
Everhart, back to you.
The FOI principles do not deal with what governments do or governments don't. It deals with the document that ICANN has at the moment and the policies that it has at the moment. CCTLD policy is, or CCNSO policy is developed by the CCNSO, not by the GAC, not by nobody else. The principles do not tell a government what to do. It tells ICANN how to interpret existing documents and policies, RFC 1591, plus the GAC principles. The documents do not say that a government of the day has to decide whether a CCTLD manager gets his management or his property or whatever taken away. The GAC principles are very clear on this, that if a redelegation occurs, the rights of the existing manager must be taken into consideration. With regards to ISIS, if ISIS were to manage to get themselves an ISO code by the United Nations, they would be entitled to apply for a top-level domain. The IANA function and the RFC 1591 clearly says is not in the business of deciding what a country is. There are mechanisms in place to decide what a country is, and if the international community, United Nations and others, were to decide, for example, that ISIS is a country, ISIS would be entitled to representation on the GAC, and they would probably get it. This is not a good example. The FOI principle do not say what a government's rights are. It says what the documents that IANA, that ICANN has, as the IANA function manager, say. And they do not say that a government of the day can go and decide, the one who is doing it now is wrong, I want my brother-in-law or the deputy under permanent secretaries for paperclip son-in-law to get it. It does also not say that a democratic government like the United States or the Germany or the one of the model democracies in the world, where the government has full legitimation and whatever, can do that. So they can do that, but on their own initiative in their own country. They do not have a legal structure in place, there is no policy in place that allows this to do. Not, I don't agree with you that we should have such a policy, but we have to agree that there is no such policy at this point in time. And that's what the principles are saying.
Okay. Thanks, Eberhard. And we're not going to rerun the, what was it, 5 or 6 years' worth of framework of interpretation working group work here in today's call. But what I've also made notes of, Rafael, just to ensure that what you're putting into the chat is, and thank you for quoting it specifically from the Singapore communique from the GAC, because that will make it easy for us to capture as a footnote, a reference point relating to stress test 21. That will be a way forward. We do recognise this as a highly sensitive and contentious issue, but we need some colour and excitement in our day, and this stress test can probably add it for us. Paul, you put your hand down. Did you wish? And it's back up. Over to you. Paul?
No, it's okay. We take it another time.
Yes, remember, this is not a framework of interpretation in GAC meeting.
But there's an elephant in the room here.
There always is.
Okay,
just noting again from the chat, Wisdom has put in some extensive text, which I'm going to assure you the chat in this meeting does form part of the formal record, obviously the debate that's going around this is important, but what we're looking at in today's call is the text relating to these current stress tests. We're going to be modifying stress test 21 to ensure that a proper and appropriate reference to the framework of interpretation working group outcomes and indeed the GAC principles, because of course FII looked at RFC 1591 and the GAC principles in its work, as well as annotate in a footnote that quotes specifically from the GAC communique out of Singapore, and we'll see how that text runs through this group in a future meeting. Eberhard, back to you briefly, and then I would like to get into the substantive discussion on the column two. Thanks.
Push the button. Thank you. We all have our interests. I know the interests of Per Bromark and the government of NUI with regards to the .nu domain very well. Probably not the position of the GAC as a whole. Doesn't really matter. Public policy is, like I just typed, is made in a country, and I would like to be ICANN to be subject to the jurisdiction of every single country where CCTLD is in. It doesn't happen. So it's not going to happen that any government can ICANN policy decide that the government decides what happens with the CCTLD. This policy would violate the bylaws. This policy does not exist. That said, the governments are responsible for public policy in their countries and hence also for the CCTLDs. But that's a country issue internally. That's not an issue for ICANN to deal with.
Yeah. Okay. Steve, back to you. We've over-talked this. It is important, but I do think we need to move on to column two. Thanks.
Right, and thank you. Well, I look forward to clarifying text that you just outlined, and Eberhard, if you send it to me in the body of an email, I will paste it into the doc and circulate a PDF. The way the stress test was applied in column 2 and 3, though, looked at a very narrow question. It said, whatever the policy is under the FOI, or whatever the policy is, how does the community hold ICANN accountable to follow the policy? That is the only thing that this is structured to look at. So it's not about what should the policy be, but it's how does the community have empowerment to hold ICANN accountable to follow the policy. And that's the way that most all of these stress tests are structured. And so with that in mind, we focus only on whether the community had standing to challenge something that management did when it certified that the process was followed for a revocation, which I now understand is misconduct has to be the criteria, or did management follow the procedures to appoint a new CCTLD manager, which does involve some community input. So this is, let's focus ourselves very tightly on the question of giving the community, and I understand Everhart's point that the relevant community for appointing a new CCTLD manager, the relevant community might only be the users and registrants of that country. I understand that. But in any regard, how does the community force ICANN to implement its procedures, not to make new procedures? Okay, so it started off by suggesting that NTIA has a role today. They claim it's clerical, but they have a role today to say, we are part of certifying that ICANN followed its procedure, and I don't know of any way that we could challenge that today. And we don't need to spend too much time on that because NTIA is walking away from that role. So we turn into the third column, and we understand that the CWG is working on an independent appeals process that was in the letter that they originally drafted, and it might have been designed to handle appeals of disputes just like this. And we would evaluate those in this stress test when and if they publish it. But as I noted earlier, the CWG did ask whether or not the independent review process that we're working on, the improved independent review process, perhaps could take on questions such as they were anticipating for an IAP. And if so, we just need to have the appropriate standard of review. Now, in the far right column, there are two mechanisms for community empowerment. One is the reconsideration, because reconsideration should be able to address a management decision to certify a CCTLD change. We need a standard of review for that, and we need a standard of review if it goes to an independent review panel. This community veto doesn't need standard of review, but anytime you go to a third party to make a decision, we have to have a written standard that they can look back to. And again, that written standard could be the framework of interpretation and those principles. Any comments on this? And I realize it's an early draft because we're going to make some significant revisions.
Thanks, Steve. We are making significant revisions, but we should note that Sam's existing markup language in her comment was talking about getting more information from the Framework of Interpretation Working Group / CCTLD operators on how they see accountability for ICANN following the documented delegation and redelegation processes. So perhaps it would be useful for us to take a formal action to write and ask. The best way to do that at this stage would be to address that to, I believe, the CCNSO Council, because at the moment the FOI Working Group has passed on its final report to the CCNSO Council. Sam, would that be okay from your point of view? Ah, over to you, Sam. You might be on mute.
Yes, sorry, just coming off mute. I think that could be okay. I don't know if that overcomplicates it now. I think that what Steve suggested about this column being agnostic to what that policy is, but it's how we follow the policy and how the community can assure the policy is followed might be sufficient.
Okay.
I feel like our conversation earlier and the changes that will be coming for the first column actually answer some of my concern about whether or not this stress test description was complete. And so I don't know if we need to – I don't know if anyone else here has thoughts on it, but I'm not sure that we need to reach out specifically to the CCNSO Council because I really resonated with the comments that Steve made that this existing accountability measure is agnostic to what the policy says, but it's how we get adherence to policy.
Right. Okay. Well, I'll suggest that unless anyone objects, we hold that action, recognizing we may resuscitate that action should we decide it's worthy of doing so once we get the next generation of the text drafting. Happy with that, Sam? I'm going to assume you are, and you're going to put your hands down. And have a glass of water to sip. You sound my throat is feeling sore just in sympathy with listening to your throat. You're clearly not very well, and it's probably only 5 a.m. where you are.
My hand, don't worry.
Great. Okay, take care of yourself. Steve, back to you then.
All right, Cheryl. As I noted earlier, I have a pretty hard stop in just a few minutes here.
Yep.
So you guys will continue without me. I think you had scheduled this call for 2 hours. Is that right?
We have, although recognizing that we're pretty close to halfway through, I'm also happy to suggest that we will need to reconvene. We've got some new text that needs to come into what we've discussed, and we've got some fairly significant comments coming up in 3 and 4 to go through. So what I'm going to do is suggest we do stop this call at the 90-minute mark rather than the 180, and that we set up another call to start to continue on where we leave off now with 3 and 4, but also to review the good work we've already done to date, and we can report back at next week's CCWG call to keep everyone else up to date on where we are with all of this. Just before we do wrap up, however, Sam, before your voice fades totally, previous discussion on 3 and 4, I think it was you that suggested this is one where we may wish to decouple, where we've grouped and coupled stress tests in the past. We're now moving into a new category, which is the legal and legislative action category. But Sam, just perhaps to get us to think about this, and you've got significant comments here, you suggested perhaps decoupling 3 and 4, and you might want to just give us the high days and holidays review of your comments onto 3 and 4, and we might then wrap up and work out a reconvening. Okay, and you've got a hard stop at the top of the hour, which means we can give you some of your life back as well.
That just means I get to get onto the call that I'm missing part of already a little earlier. So the life of ICANN, being late to a 5 a.m. call. So I won't read my comments in full into the record right now. I think that it's there. We can discuss them more in depth. I think that the initial thing that might help spur some thinking is whether or not it makes sense to decouple litigation issues from regulation or legislation issues. I understand why an initial take might group them together, but there are often different consequences from how you handle litigation or orders coming out of litigation versus how you would handle regulations or legislation. There are very different consequences on the organization and those within the organization for failure to comply with one or the other, if that's one of the end results that that is seen from this. So I while some of the language might be able to be duplicated in both, I think it would really help to separate the two, because I think we'll find that there are some important distinctions between litigation-related issues and regulation or legislation-related issues. And I'd like to just stop there, I think, unless we want to go into another 20-minute conversation.
Stop! Thanks, Sam. No, we won't go into another 20-minute conversation, but we will come back to another 20-minute conversation when we reconvene. And just on that, I think we've had a very productive conversation today. I'd like to hear more from more of you, both on our list, but also in another call. So if this time of day suits you, and it seems to me that we've got a reasonably good lineup, what I'm going to ask staff to do is to put out another doodle poll, making sure that it is local time zone enabled, even though it will go out in UTC time. It should allow you to select your local time zone, so you can make sure that anything you're selecting yay or nay to, or possible or impossible for, is going to suit your calendar for next week. But just before we stop now, is there anybody who cannot make a call at this time, or perhaps later, but preferably at this time, on next week, which would be the, let me look, either the 16 or 17 at this UTC time. We could do 16, 17 or 18 at the moment. I'm not showing anything in the calendar. And we'll see which is possible for next week. Steve, you're okay with... I'd like to give people three options and see which works out best. All right, then, under that circumstance, I'm going to give a final action item to staff to put together a doodle for that. And I'm getting a tick from Eberhardt, which is good, because if this time suits most of us, it's not too inhumane for me. I'll just have to sympathise with Sam as having to get to 4 a.m. starts instead of 5 a.m. starts, which she seems to be used to. I want to thank you all. I want to remind those of you who've taken some text writing to do so in short order and get it across to Steve. Steve is holding the pen on all of this because I also don't use Microsoft products, and unfortunately what seems to be is whenever I use my open source stuff and try and send it to everyone else, it mucks up in formatting or something goes wrong. So Steve does use Microsoft products, so he gets to hold the pen, as we discovered the hard way in the Frankfurt meeting. Everything I did he have to redo. Thank you one and all. We will reconvene with a review of what we've done today in next week's call, and we will be starting with a discussion of decoupling 3 and 4, and I would suggest our aim will be to complete the rest of those stress tests in next week's call, so that there is a pretty close to second read through on everything that we can share with the whole CCWG when we get together in Istanbul. And that was a very, very hard sentence for me to say. Good night, good morning, good afternoon, or good day to you. Thank you, staff, and thank you one and all. This call has now ended.